Morning, everyone. Today's Daf Nerevin, Daf Lamin. We're on the bottom of Chav Tes Amud Beis, and we're four lines from the bottom, and we are beginning. Continuation of yesterday's Daf, more or less, in that we're discussing how much food to put out there for your Erev Tchum. In order to go beyond 2,000 Amos, beyond your Tchum, and you would like to go further than 2,000 Amos, we need to put down what's called an Erev Tchum. Our third parak of Erevin really discusses Eruv Tchumim, but not from the fundamental issue of center, point of center, and exactly distance. But our Mishnah starts off with a detail, which is the food that's used to actually put down. And as opposed to Erev Chatzeres, where it has to be bread, so by Erev Tchum, so it could be any food. The only limitations that our Mishnah is that it cannot be water and it cannot be salt. Those are foods that do not sustain a person. They have no caloric value whatsoever, and so therefore they cannot be used. However, short of that, however, anything else can be used for your Eruv Tchum. We've discussed yesterday in great detail exactly foods that you use, how much of those foods should you use. The larger answer to the question of how much food you should use is shtei seudos. You need to use enough that it would encompass two meals. Now, normally a meal is made up of more than one foodstuff. In other words, you're going to usually have for a meal bread and meat and a salad maybe. But nevertheless, so the assumption is, going into this discussion, that sometimes a meal can be represented by one food, and of that one food, how much do you normally eat of that one food for that one meal? For example, yesterday we talked about wine. So the Gemara says sometimes you just drink a revius of wine for one meal. In fact, the Gemara said yesterday, you have a revius in the morning, you have a revius in the evening, and that'll be your day. Okay. Hard to imagine that's such an exciting day, but that's what the Gemara said yesterday in terms of in terms of eating. So depending on the food,
you put the food aside. Do you have to eat it?
Right. Good question. You'll see some of your questions going to be addressed today in today's daf. So you put you put the food aside, and that now serves as your Erev Tchum. Even in this discussion of how much food represents shtei seudos, so we're going to ask even a more fine-tuned question, which is the following. Shtei seudos is how much of this food I eat normally for this one meal. Let's say this food in particular is an accessory food, meaning I don't normally eat it by itself, but I eat it together in conjunction with bread. Right? Bread is the staple food of the Torah. And everything revolves around bread. You have a meal of bread. You know, you don't have to make any brachas on anything else you're eating over the course of the meal that you're eating in conjunction with bread, because everything in there comes to accessorize bread. Let's say this food is something that accessorizes bread. So therefore, I know before I sit down, I'm not going to eat so much of this food because it's going to come in conjunction with bread. The term the Gemara uses is lalafes boas apas. So there, can I take into consideration that I don't normally eat this as a standalone meal? I normally eat this in conjunction with bread, and that would be a leniency because that would then allow me to bring just the small amount that I normally eat in conjunction with bread. This is what we're going to start our Gemara's daf today, and let's begin right now. I'm Rav Yehuda Mishmul. Kol shehul liftan kedei lechol bo, kol she'eino liftan kedei lechol heimenu. So Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says that's the rule, that if it's something that normally comes in conjunction with somebody else, with another food, so therefore I don't have to take into consideration this is all I'm eating. I normally eat this in conjunction with another food, so I only need to bring the small amount that I normally would eat of it. It's interesting. It does not sound like you have to bring the bread, meaning it's just enough that I just bring this particular food and I don't have to figure out, is this going to make it for my whole meal? Well, normally it would because I have bread, and that would be sufficient. However, says Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, if it's eino liftan, so if it's not a lefet, if it's not there to accessorize bread, so then kedei lechol heimenu, then I have to think about how I'm going to eat this in of itself. So for example, basar chai, raw meat. Now, raw meat is a funny discussion in the Gemara. Raw meat is not normally eaten by itself. But in this discussion, it's going to be assumed that, yeah, we'll have a little bit of raw meat. Could be that the raw meat is salted. And if the raw meat's salted, so then they used to eat in the good old days salted raw meat. Kind of like one of those, like, meat sticks, whatever. Anyway, kedei lechol heimenu basar tzli. I'm sorry. So, basar chai kedei lechol heimenu. Well, you don't eat raw meat together with bread. In other words, that's not considered a lefes. And so therefore, when it comes to raw meat, so it is, you have to figure out how much of this meat am I going to eat in of itself. However, Bastot Sli, when it comes to roasted meats, the Rabba Amar Kedelechol Bo. Rav Yosef Amar Kedelechol Haymenu. So roasted meats, the discussion, a debate in the Gemara, whether that's considered a lefes. If it's considered a lefes, so then you only have to bring enough to accessorize. Meaning we have this phenomenon nowadays, it's called a sandwich. So first, it's interesting. We do use meat lelafes bo. We do use it as an accessory, but sandwich is a rather modern invention. Relative to the Gemara has a debate whether or not meat is considered a lefis. I'm Rav Yosef Menamin Allah Dahani Parsai Achli Tabake Below Nahama. So Rav Yosef says, look, I'm going to make my point, I'm going to prove my case, and we're going to look at the Persians. What do the Persians do? They eat their meat without bread. So in other words, for the Persians, meat represents a standalone meal, therefore it's not a lefis. Therefore, if you're going to use meat for your Erev Tchum, you must use enough meat that would represent two meals in of itself and not in conjunction with bread. So that is Rav Yosef's proof, pointing to the Persian dietary habits. So Abaye says, okay, I'm very happy the Persians eat their meat as a standalone meal with no accessory, no bread together, but who cares? They don't represent the majority of the world, and they're not going to dictate what is the norms of halacha. The Hatzadon, in fact, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah to make this point, and the point being is that people's habits will not represent other people's habits. Big Da'aniyim La'aniyim, Big Da'ashirim La'ashirim, Ava Big Da'ashirim La'aniyim Lo. We have a halacha regarding Kabbalah Satumah that if you have clothing, so you need a minimum amount of clothing in order to be Mekabel Tumah. What is a minimum amount? So it depends whether you're wealthy or poor. If you're wealthy, it's three tfachim, and if you're poor, it's three etzbaos. Three etzbaos for the poor person because for him, clothing is such a commodity, it's so scarce, that he's going to need just a small, even for him, a small little patch of clothing, a swatch of clothing is going to be significant. Masha Enke, when it comes to the Ashir, where for him, clothing comes, clothing goes. So for him, what would be considered a chash of a significant amount of clothing would be three tfachim. Okay? And the Mishnah then goes on to say, Ava big de Ashirim la'aniyim lo. However, if you have somebody's clothing, which is an Ashir, and you transfer it over to an Ani, it doesn't change. Meaning, the Shir does not change. So you see that the clothing habits of the Ashirim will not impact the Aniim, nor vice versa. What you get from this, although we are somewhat off base over here in terms of what we're discussing, but the idea is conceptually, they have a particular practice, they have their norms, we have our norms. The Persians eat meat as a standalone meal, we eat meat in conjunction with bread. So we would like to be more makel than the Persians, and the Persian practice doesn't have to impact us. Good. And perhaps the Gemara says, maybe, we're just being machmir. Meaning, in the case of the clothing, we're going to be machmir. And look, for the Ani's perspective, for him, three etzbaos is significant. If I take clothing from the Ashir, that will not impact his particular norm. His norm is three etzbaos. So for him, we're going to remain machmir, meaning even if it's a small patch, a swatch of clothing, it's still going to be mekabel tumah. Here by Erev, we're just going to be machmir. Meaning that the Persian norm of eating meat as a standalone meal, which would require us to have more meat for our Erev Tchomim, maybe we're just interested in being machmir. V'atayin, the Gemara says, that's not a rational explanation. It's not a plausible explanation. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer Ma'avir L'chola Olozakin Kedei Mezono Ula Ra'avtam Besuda Bein Anishal Kol Adam. Look at the statement of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Let's say you're going to make an Erev Tchum for someone who's old or sick. Their appetite is really reduced. You don't have to bring what is an objective two-meal ration for their Erev Tchum. Whatever for them would be considered a meal, that's fine. And let's say you saw somebody who has an extraordinary appetite, right? The Gemara refers to as a Rav Tan. Him also. You don't have to bring a meal relative to what he normally eats as two meals, but a standard two-meal allowance is all you need for your Tchumim. You see from here that we're not interested in just simply being machmir when it comes to Erev Tchum. Let's also remind each other that Erev Tchum is a din derabanan, not a din deraisa. So generally speaking, by derabanans, we're not seeking to be machmir. So here also, you can't just simply give the argument, oh, it's okay, we're being machmir, that's what's going on over here. That's not necessarily true. Kasha, the Gemara says, that is a good point. Point well taken. And so therefore, we are basically left questioning Rav Yosef's assertion that because the Persians eat meat as a standalone meal, so therefore, when making an erev with meat, it has to be enough meat as standalone meals. Basically, the Gemara seems to have not rejected, but strongly questioned the position of Rav Yosef. You don't need that much meat to make your erev. The Gemara points out now, we're going to just sit on the statement of Shimon ben Elazar in terms of subjective nature. Shimon ben Elazar says that when it comes to making an Erev, it's all subjective. If you don't have a big appetite, if you're a chola, you're a zaken, so therefore a small amount of food is fine. And even if you're a benonis, even if you're a raftan, if you're someone who has a tremendous appetite, the standard meal is fine, that would be sufficient. Good. On the other hand, the Gemara says, let's take a look at a position, Shimon ben Elazar, which is espoused in the Mishnayos in Olos. Okay. The Mishnayos over here discuss the following. Okay, Tumas Ohel. What do we know? You have a mace in the room. The mace gives off Tumas Ohel, which means that the Tumah goes up, hits the roof, spreads off the roof, drops down over the entirety of the interior of the room, and everything now in the room is going to become a mace. Good. What about the psachim? What about the places under the lentils? Now, here in this room, we have one doorway out. We do have windows as well. But let's just speak simply. Let's just speak about doorways. So what about the interior under the lentils? So this is a discussion in the Mishnayos and Olos. And basically, the rule of thumb is as follows. First of all, if the Pesach is anything less than a tefach by a tefach, that's not considered an egress. That's not considered a real option of extracting the mace out of the room. I mean, a tefach is tiny. It's 4 inches, 4 by 4 inches. And even if you have multiple egresses out of the room, if one of them is 4 tefachim and the rest of them are less than 4 tefachim, once again, we pretty much know which one will be the egress. It's going to be the one of 4 tefachim. If let's say that's a scenario where all of them are under 4 tefachim, one of them is 4 tefachim, once again, we know which one the mace is going to be taken out of, and that means that the tumah will, even though right now the mace is in the room, the tumah will spread to under the interior of the doorway, but of that 4 tefach doorway. And finally, let's say I have a whole bunch of doorways exiting out of the room, and each one of them is over 4 tefachim. Now what? So we say that before you make a conscious decision of where the mace is coming out, every doorway, every area under the lentil of every doorway exiting out of this room is going to be subject to Tumas Mace. Only after I make a conscious decision, and it seems to be that you have to articulate it, although I can't give you clear proof that that's so, but if you make a conscious decision of where the mace is going out of from this room, so then only that doorway is subject to Tumas Mace. Okay, those are your basic rules of the Tumas Mace as it applies to the area under the doorway. The discussion in the Mishnayos and Olos deals with the following. Let's say you have the human remains of Og Melech HaBashan. The Gemara just uses Og as a prototype. It means a very large person, an extraordinarily large person. Pischo Kim Malo'o. Shimon Elazar says, in order for a doorway to be considered a Pesach, it has to be actually as big as Og. Meaning, it can, 4 tefachim is simply insufficient. Obviously, 1 tefach is going to be insufficient. It has to be a doorway that meets and satisfies the actual dimensions of the mace inside the room as well. Pischov kimlo. And if you do have a Pesach as large, so it's going to save all the other psachim. If you don't have a Pesach that large, it will not save all the other psachim. That is Rav Shimon ben Elazar in the Mishnayos and Olos. And the Gemara thinks, right now, at this point in time, we have a problem. When it comes to Erevin, he gave not an objective standard of this is how much you eat, That's how much you have to lay down for your Eruv. But rather he gave a, look, this is normal meal, even though you normally eat more, it's okay. For an Eruv Tchum, this is a normal meal. And the Gemara thinks right now, comparing this halacha of Shimon ben Elazar regarding Eruvin to the halacha of Shimon ben Elazar when it comes to Tumas Meis, where there we are not subjective, but over there we are objective. We deal with the real numbers of what are the dimensions of the human versus what is the exit of the doorway. So the Gemara thinks right now at this point in time, this is a question. So Abaye says, I do not believe that this is a question at all. Because let's think about this just for a moment. In the case of Tumas Meis, when having the human remains of Og in this room, well, what do you think we're going to do? The Gemara says, Hadume Nahadme Vinafke. Do you really think that we're going to cut up the body and remove the body piecemeal out of the room? Obviously not. Nivel Hameis, that would be a desecration of the human remains. We're not going to do that. Obviously, when dealing with a human remains and exiting the room, we're going to not look at it subjectively. We're not going to say what is the normal consideration. There, we're going to have to look in real terms. Otherwise, how are we going to get the mace out of the room? Good. That's the... So, at one point, the Gemara thought that was a question, and the obvious response of Tumas mace for the og scenario is obviously going to be different. We don't have an option over there of looking at subjective. We have to be objective over there. And now, while we're on this mission in Oalos, so let's ask a simple question. That Mishnah says, this is the opinion of Shimon ben Elazar. Kind of sounds like that the Chachamim argue, which is hard to imagine. But it sounds that way, doesn't it? So, Tashma, Damar, Rabba, Vachana, Amr, Rav Yochanan, Og, Melech, Habashan, Pizcho, Be'arba'a. So the Gemara quotes the name of Rav Yochanan. Now, Rav Yochanan is an Amora, so he can't argue with the Mishnah, which I guess is the point of the Gemara right now. Meaning, if Rav Yochanan hadn't received it as some sort of tradition, there's no way he'd be saying this. That even though I have Og Melech Habashan in the room, a Pesach of four Tfachim, and all the other Pesachim are less than four Tfachim, that will be the designated Pesach in which we're going to take him out of the room. All the other Pesachim are saved. So it doesn't have to be Pizcho Kim Lo O, not like Rav Shimon ben Elazar said in the Mishnah in Oalos, but rather four Tfachim is going to be enough. So Hasam Diika Pesachim Ketanim Tuva Viika Chad Have Arba Devade Ki Kamarvach Ba'i Kamarvach. Because look, again, we're not going to cut up the body, that's not even an option. But what we're going to do is look, in order to get the mace out of the room, we're going to have to make some structural changes to the room. We're going to have to widen the doors. If I have one Pesach that's four Tfachim and all the other Pesachim are not, our first option is going to be to try to widen the doorway, which is already four Tfachim.
Bring it in the room.
Yeah. Right. Good riddle, and I don't know the solution. I'm Rabbi Chiya bar Rav Ashi, I'm Rav Ma'arvin Babasar Chai. Okay, good. We are done with the discussion of how much, whether or not the Persians affect the normative halacha, whether we look at subjective versus objective, the question from the Mishnah in Tumas Meis, in Oalos, and we go on. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Chiya bar Ashi, Amar Rav Ma'arvin Babasar Chai. You can make an error of using raw meat. Amar Rav Shimon bar Chiya Ma'arvin Bebeitzin Chayos. You could use raw eggs. Vikama. And now if you're going to use raw eggs as your error of Tchum, how many eggs represent two meals? Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Sina Amar Shtayim. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak quotes Sinai. Sinai over here is not Halach L'Moshe Min Sinai. Sinai over here is a nickname for Rav Yosef. Remember the Gemara at the end of Brachos? The Gemara there describes Rav Yosef as being Sinai. Rashi over here quotes, L'fisha Yabaki, B'mishnayos of Raisos. He knew Mishnayos and Raisos clearly. He knew all of them. He was referred to as Sinai. The Gemara there at the end of Brachos had the basic question. What's better, analytical skills or Bikius, or knowledge of all the Mishnayos of the Braisos? So the, what was Gemara's conclusion? Remember? Sinai. Sinai was a preferred trait over analytical skills. So the Gemara says, anyway, send name a Sinai Shtayim, you need two. And two raw eggs, that would be one raw egg per meal. Okay, I guess he's in training. Okay, now, we are moving on in the Mishnah. Okay, we have spent now some time, three blot of Gemara, discussing the halachas of making an Eruv with any food outside of water and salt, buying using your kesef meiser money to buy food in Yerushalayim, again, all foods except for water and salt, and now up to the third ruling of the Mishnah, which is, let's say you make a neder, and your neder is, I'm not going to eat mazon, period. Mutter b'mayim ha-melech, the only thing you can eat now is going to be water and salt. Gemara is bothered for the following reason. Melech ha-mayim u'dolo ikre mazon, ha-kol mile ikre mazon. Okay, what do you see over here? That in the world of Nedarim, when you say the word mazon, it means anything short of water and salt. Okay, right, that's exactly what our Mishnah is saying. What's the problem with that? Lemetei avidyufta d'Rav Shmuel should be challenged to Rav Shmuel, the Rav Shmuel, d'Amitabayu, ein mevarchim barimim mizonos, ela al-chamesha taminim bavad. We go back to the sixth parak of brachos, and do you remember? We had a discussion over there about when do I make the bracha of barimim and mizonos. Rav Shmuel say, you only make the bracha of barimim and mizonos if it's a food that's made out of the chamesha taminim. Only if it's made out of the 5 grains. Wheat, barley, spelt, oats, rye. Only a food made of, consistent of those 5 grains, is only subject to the bracha of mizonos. Any other foods is not subject to the bracha of mizonos. Why? Because only those 5 are mazon, are considered sustaining foods, satiating foods. All of the foods are not mazon. Interestingly enough, is the halacha falak Rav Shmuel? Interestingly enough, no. There's another food that we make a mizonos on, and that would be called rice. So the Gemara says, our Mishnah is against Rav Shmuel. So the Gemara says, first of all, why hit a man when he's down? Volo sivnechad zimna. Remember the 6th parak of brachos? We already knocked out the position of Rav Shmuel once in brachos. So again here, the Gemara says, lema tiavati yufta nami meha. So the Gemara says, yeah, okay, you're right. In the 6th parak of brachos, we already knocked out their position. We do make a bracha mezonos on rice, but let's also look at our Mishnah in the 3rd parak of Erevin and note that the 3rd parak of Erevin is difficult against them as well. Am Rav Huna bar Omer kol hazan alai. No, says the Gemara. Our Mishnah is not necessarily a question against Rav and Shmuel. Because our Mishnah, although the Mishnah uses the word mazon, maybe what our Mishnah means is kol hazan alai. Anything that will sustain me, meaning it has calories. Water and salt don't have calories. Fruit has calories. That's what the Mishnah means. Our Mishnah means when it says that any kol hazan alai, I'm making an edge of kol hazan alai. So then you can't have anything with it with caloric intake, but water and salt, that's fine. My mumalachu de lo zayne, kol mile zayne. That's what our Mishnah means. If that's what our Mishnah means, I guess could be that they're changing the gears of the Mishnah, or maybe just simply the understanding of the Mishnah. Either way, that's what our Mishnah means, and it doesn't necessarily reflect a question on Rav and Shmuel.
But we know shahakals. We've been talking about all these different
shahakals. Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, I don't.
We know it's.
I'll tell you right. I'm just gonna pile on your question. Meaning, right now, our Mishnah says everything else is mazon outside of water and salt. Meaning, Rav and Shmuel were just the machlokas over there is a fine tuned machlokas about whether rice is included or not included. Over here, a proof from our Mishnah would seem to be we're covering every other food outside of water and salt. Gemara doesn't think for a moment that vegetables is considered a mizonos, meaning I don't know. But okay, but anyway, that's where the discussion takes us. V'amar Rav Abba Chana ki avazin abasre de Rabbi Yochanan lamecha peres de ginosar. The Gemara says, you know, I went together with Rabbi Yochanan to eat peres de ginosar. Peres ginosar, fruit of the ginosar, fruit that are grown around the Kinneret area. Now, if we were 100 people, each one would take 10 fruit. And if we were just 10 people, everyone would take 100 fruit. But the point is, we always walked away with 1,000 fruit. And the fruit was so large that we came up with these big baskets, and you couldn't fit 100 of them in these really large baskets. And Rav Yochanan ate all of them. Okay, now it sounds like that's a lot for one person to eat. We're going to remind each other that Rav Yochanan was also a very large man. The Gemara elsewhere describes him as a Baal Basar, right? So in other words, he was a large man with a large appetite. And by the way, he also was very attractive. So says the Gemara in Bava Metzia. So the so we have all this about Rav Yochanan, and the point the Gemara is now about to make is the following. The Amar. Shvu asa delo ta'im li ziyuna. And then he says, you know, I know I ate just a lot of fruit, but I'm not full. In other words, it's fruit that I ate. It's delicious. But I'm not full. So what you get from here, and the word that he used specifically was ziyuna. Not mazon, but ziyuna. And it sounds like even fruit, which definitely has caloric intake, even fruit is not a zun. So the Gemara says, Ema mizona. Rav Yochanan got misquoted. We misheard him. It's not ziyuna that he said, it's rather mazon. Meaning, if you eat bread or anything made out of the five grains, so that obviously has caloric intake, but also you feel full. Meaning you walk away from that meal feeling full. That's the difference between zon and mazon. Mazon is a sense of not just I know that I'm going to be sustained, but also I have that sense of I'm full. Right? Think about how we felt at the end of any of our meals over the past yontif. Here, zon just simply means it's gonna carry me over. There's calories to what I'm eating. Good. So again, that's not going to be a kasha as well. I'm Ravuna. I'm Rav Shmuel Shlo Ochel Kikar Zu. Okay. And now we continue this discussion, and we take the discussion to the following path. The Gemara here is going to discuss now, can I use a food for my Erev Tchum if I made a neder against eating such a food? Okay, watch how the discussion develops. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Shmuel Shlo Ochel Kikar Zu. Now, by the way, I'm sorry, before we start in the Gemara, you understand that's not what our Mishnah's discussion was. Our Mishnah was making three points not necessarily related. Not necessarily. The first part of the Mishnah was you could use whatever food you want for Erev Tchum, barring water and salt. The second part of the Mishnah is when you go to Yerushalayim with your Kesef Meister money, you could buy whatever food you want except for water and salt. And the third point of the Mishnah is that if you make a neder against mazon, or as we now learned, against anything which is zan, you can't eat anything outside of water and salt. The third point of our Mishnah had nothing to do with using that food for your Eruv. It just was a larger discussion of what's included in your neder. Now the Gemara is going to conflate. And the Gemara is basically going to discuss the following. What if I made a neder against a food? Can I then use it for my Eruv? Yes or no? Okay, good. So it's going to be very similar to the Nazir. All right, so watch carefully, as the Gemara is going to discuss. I'm Rav Huna, I'm Rav Shua, Shula, Ochel, Kikar Zu. If the Shvu is, I will not eat this loaf of bread, Marvelo Ba. So then you can make an Erev with this bread, because your neder was that you're not allowed to eat this bread, but you can get other types of Hana from this bread, including using it for your Erev Tchum. Even though you can't eat it. Now that's strange, but as Danny pointed out, we learned in the Mishnah, the Nazir can make his Erev using wine. So, however, Alai, Kikarzu, Alai, Ein Ma'arvin Loba. However, if you say that I'm not going to get any benefit whatsoever from this bread, you cannot use it as your Erev. So, Meizvan, O Dominic Kikar Ma'arvin Loba. The Gemara quotes a Braisa, and the Braisa seems to totally contradict, as the Braisa says, that you make a neder from a loaf of bread, you could use it for your Erev. My love damar alai lo damar zu. So the Gemara says, no, you didn't say the word alai, which means that it becomes fundamentally prohibited to me, but rather what you meant to say is, or what you actually said is, this loaf of bread I'm not going to eat. So hachinami mistabit diktani seifa, and then the Gemara says, look, go on in the Braisa. Amos, I bizman shama shavua shalo et amenu, aval amar alai, my hachinami dein marvin lo ba. So the Gemara says, what do you see over here in this Braisa? It's only when you make the shavua of, I won't eat the bread, where it could serve as your Erev Tchum. But if you say that alai, this bread is prohibited to me for all purposes, so then you can't use it for a neighbor as well. So Ihachi, the Gemara says, Adanani Kikar Zu Hekdesha Marvin Laba, Lefisha Marvin Behekdeshos, Leflogulas Nebididay. So the Gemara just wonders, fine, why doesn't the Braisa make a sharper and crisper distinction? before moving on to a discussion of using Hekdesh as your Erev Tchum, why not make a very sharp distinction and say, look, if my neder was against eating the loaf of bread, so then it's fine. If my letter, if my neder was getting all types of benefits prohibited to me, so then you can't use it. So the Gemara says, okay, but what are you left to conclude? That if you said a lie, then you could use it, kasha reisha. That's going to be difficult because the reisha says, only when my neder was, I can't eat from the loaf of bread, is it going to be acceptable? So the Gemara says, we're going to have to add some missing parts to this brisa in order to make sense of the brisa. That if I make a neder from a kikar, you could use it for your eruv, even if you say a lie, it's analogous to saying that I will not eat this loaf of bread. So the Gemara says, okay, all said and done, it's difficult for Rav Huna. Why is it difficult for Rav Huna? Because Rav Huna made this distinction between zu versus alai. So who da amar ka Rabbi Eliezer? So the Gemara says, yeah, at least Rav Huna has the position of Eliezer that supports him. Titanya Rabbi Eliezer amar shvo shlo ochel kikar zu ma'ar v'lo ba. Kikar zu alai e ma'ar v'lo ba. So Rabbi Eliezer makes this very distinction. And then the Gemara just finishes up this discussion, one loose end. Umi amar Rabbi Eliezer achi v'atanya ze'aklal adam oser atzma ba'ochel. Ma'arvin lo ba, ochel ha'nesar lo la'adam ein ma'arvin lo ba. If a person makes food prohibited to him, meaning via neder, he could use it as an eruv. If the food is objectively prohibited to him, i.e. it's hekdesh, he can't use it for an eruv. So Rabbi Lazar Omer, kikazu alai ma'arvin lo ba, kikazu hekdesh ein ma'arvin lo ba, lefisha ein ma'arvin lo begdeshos. Trey tanai v'alibu de Rabbi Eliezer, the Gemara points out that Rabbi Eliezer is counted from is recorded two different ways. Rav Huna obviously has them recorded the first way, where there's going to make a real difference whether you say zev versus a lie. Now, there's one opinion in the Gemara which we seem to accept, which is that if I make a neder against bread, I could still use it for my eruv. Okay. Now, the obvious question is why should that be? Why is it that if I'm not allowed to get any benefit from this bread, I can use it as my Erev? So as Danny pointed out back in the Mishnah, well, it's no different than the Nazir. Okay. And it's no different than the case of Truma. Those are foods that I'm not allowed to eat, and yet I can make an Erev with them. But more fundamentally, though, let's just for a moment think about this, and I'm going to cite Rashi in just a second. Why is it that I'm allowed to use it if I can't eat it? So take a look at Rashi on the bottom. Lishna Achrina. It's the last three lines of Rashi. Where Rashi over here says, Kikar zu alai ma'arvin lo ba, da amr lakaman. So Rashi says, if you take tomorrow's daf into consideration, you totally understand the halacha that we're discussing right now. We're discussing the halacha that if I make a neder against bread, I still can use that bread for my Erev. Why? Because we're going to learn tomorrow's daf, ein ma'arvin elo dvar mitzvah. If I want to extend my tchum, so what reason, what's justifiable in terms of why I want to extend it? Simply because I want to walk there? So we'll see tomorrow's daf that, no, you have to have more than just a, I want to walk there, but there's a mitzvah reason to do so. Chasam v'kala, an avel, a velus, I want to go hear a shir. In other words, there has to be a mitzvah component to me wanting to extend my eruv in one particular direction. And then Rashi says, now that you know that, so I'm setting up my Erev Tchum for the purpose of a mitzvah. U'mitzvos lav lehenos nitnu. And then Rashi says, and we know we have this following principle, that when we're doing a mitzvah, there is no benefit that comes off of doing the mitzvah. Meaning, that's not called a hana'ah. Now obviously, in the world to come, so it's going to serve as a major check on our spreadsheet. Nevertheless, in this world, a mitzvah is not considered a hana'ah. So, for example, you want to shake a lulav, you want to blow shofar with something that's prohibited to you, that's fine. Even though it's prohibited from hana'ah, but doing a mitzvah doesn't represent a hana'ah. So even though you pointed to that bread and you said, I'm not going to get benefit from it, but over here, because you are en route, the only reason why you used it for your tchum, to extend your tchum as a mitzvah, and because mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu, you didn't violate your neder. Because of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. And then Rashi deals with the other issue, which is, okay, but bottom line is you can't eat it. So Rashi says, okay, but then we have our Mishnah, which says, look, if you can't eat it, as long as somebody can eat it, that's sufficient. And Rashi says, and that's really the right way to understand all this. So in other words, Rashi adds a dimension to our discussion in terms of why it's okay, and Rashi says it's okay because of this principle of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. Right, and you're going to get benefit from it. So that's interesting. So by matzah, I don't know if this rule would apply. But by blowing shofar, for example, let's say it's a shofar belonging to Avodah Zarah. Okay, you're not allowed to benefit from it. Okay, but hearing the shofar is not that's a mitzvah. So that's not considered a hana. Ma'arvin l'nazir b'yayin masnissin d'lo kebe shamai. We're in the bottom of the Yama now. We're moving on to the Mishnah. Using a nazir using wine. Now, a nazir can't drink wine. But our Mishnah says he could use wine for his Erev Tchum. The Mishnah doesn't follow like the position Beis Shammai, the Tanya Beis Shammai, Omeim, Ein, Ma'arv, and Lanazir, Be'ayin, Uli, Yisrael, B'chumah. Beis Shammai, Omeim, Ma'arv, and Lanazir, Be'ayin, Uli, Yisrael, B'chumah. Okay, so now we learn. It's Machlok, B'chum, Beis Shammai, Beis Shammai, and Beis Shammai says no. Beis Shammai is obviously of the opinion that in order to lay down Erev Tchum, you have to be able to eat it. And if you can't eat it, it simply won't work as your Erev Tchum. So iatamodim now. Amram beis hillel beis shammai iatamodim shema arvin legadol biyom kippurim. Oh, what a great question! Now beis hillel says to beis shammai, I don't understand. You know, let's say you want to make an erev tchum on Yom Kippur. So can you do it or can you not do it? So the assumption, of course, is yeah, of course you can do it. You can make an erev tchum on Yom Kippur. Now the obvious question is, well, who's eating it? It's Yom Kippur. And the answer is going to be, you have a child who's done a bar mitzvah who's able to eat it. Okay, there's a mitzvah of chinuch, but in other words, the child is not prohibited from eating such a food. Good. So, amru lahem, right? And beautiful. That clearly expresses the idea that even though you're not in a position where you can eat it, as long as somebody else can eat it, it works as an erif. Okay, good. So, Beis Shammai is on the ropes. Amru lahem aval. So, Beis Shammai says, but, you know, when you're in a debate and you're ready to make your point, you're right, but, and then, Beis Hillel chops him off. Amar lahem, kishem shamarvin lagadu b'yam ha-kippurim, so kain ma'arvin l'nazir b'yayin l'Yisrael b'chumah. So Beis Hillel says, stop right there. Good. My point is now made. Now it's funny, in the world of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, we usually have Beis Hillel as being the one who yields to Beis Shammai and listens to Beis Shammai. And over here, you don't get that sense. You don't get that sense of, I'm listening to you. You much more get the sense of, good, now you know I'm right. Excuse me. So the Gemara says, U Beis Shammai, now that's the end of the Braisa. And we didn't get to hear what Beis Shammai was about to argue. So now the Gemara is going to try to attempt and serve for us what would be the counter-argument to Beis Shammai. Why is it that in Yom Kippur you can make an Erev Tchum even though you can't eat it, and meanwhile for the Nazir Yayin and for the Zarin Truma, you can't use that for Erev Tchum because you can't eat it. What's the difference? The Gemara says, Beis Shammai, Hasam ikasu daru yimi ba'od yom. Hachalekasu daru yimi ba'od yom. It's basically Heftza versus Gavra. I mean, to use modern Lumdus terminology to explain this, but that's basically it. Meaning, look, when it comes to Yom Kippur, is the food prohibited to you? No. Food's not prohibited to you. In fact, if you went there before Yom Kippur, you could sit down and you can eat it. It's fine. It just happens to be that on Yom Kippur, you can't eat it, but that's not a food issue. That's a you issue, because it's Yom Kippur. But when it comes to the Nazir and Yayin, so there, that's a food issue. Meaning that food, yayin to a nazir, is absolutely prohibited. He goes there on Friday afternoon, can he eat it? No. Can he go before he goes there Friday night, can he eat it? No. Meaning there, the food is actually asr. So Beis Shammai would say, that's the difference between nazir and Yom Kippur. which
very stretch.
Good. Okay, kemanda lo kechananya detanya. Now the Gemara notes, our Mishnah is not going like Beis Shammai. Who else is our Mishnah not going like? It's not going like Chananya as well. Detanya Chananya Omer Kol Atzman Shal Beis Shammai Lo Hayumodim Be'erev Ad Shiyotzi Mitaso V'Chol Kli Tashmisho L'Sham. So the Gemara notes that there's another version of Beis Shammai which is more extreme, and what I mean by more extreme is the following. Look. What's the whole idea of Erev Tchum, as we discussed already a number of times? I'm changing my Makom Shvisa. I don't live here, I live there. Now, for what we know the halacha is you just need to take five peaches, I'm just giving one example of what we learned yesterday, you just need to take five peaches, put it down over there, that's my new Makom Shvisa. Now, we understand that that's legal. That's a legalism. In other words, I'm not really moving over there. Right? If I was really moving over there, I'd do more than just put five peaches down over there. I take a bed, I take a chair, in other words, it's legal. It's legal speak that becomes my new Makom Shvisa. Chananya, as he quotes the opinion of Beit Shammai, says, I don't speak legal. Meaning, if you want that to become your new Makom Shvisa, so what you need to do is take out Achiyotzi Mitaso V'chol Kli Tashmisho L'Sham. Take your bed out there, take your forks, take your knives, bring a cup, a pitcher of iced tea. In other words, then and only then does that become your new Makom Shvisa. So, by the way, by seeing this extreme version of Beis Shammai, we now go back to the non-extreme version of Beis Shammai, we understand that as well. Meaning, Beis Shammai says, the Nazir can't use Yayin. Right. Because for that to work, it has to be that he actually has to go there and eat. For Beis Hillel, this is a legal mechanism. And because it's a legal mechanism, you don't have to be able to eat the food. As long as the food is edible, that's enough. So you see in this range, in the spectrum of positions, it's basically a question of, does Erev Tchum work because it's a legal mechanism? Or no, it really means that I'm moving my Makom Shvisa to that spot. And you see that clearest with this position of Chananya, which we don't follow. So keman has lahad detanya erev bishcharim lo yatsa b'levenim lo yatsa bishcharim. Let's say when you made your erev, you did so wearing black clothing, and it turns out that you needed your black clothing for whatever reason. It's the black clothing that needed the place you needed to go. You need to be wearing your black clothing, and instead of going out with black clothing, you went out with white clothing. Okay? In other words, that's not going to work. And conversely as well. B'levanim lo yatsa b'shcharim. So, keman amar Rav Nachman yitzchak Chananya hi vali b'debei Shammai. So the Gemara says, once again, that reflects the position of Chananya, which is, again, if you want to be koneh this new Makom Shvisa, you have to go there prepared. This is not a legalism. This is not a, okay, I'm here, good, it works. No. You have to go there absolutely prepared with what exactly you need. So the Gemara says, yeah, but according to Chananya, it's not enough just to be dressed the right way. Don't you also have to bring everything out as well? Your the bed and the kli tashmisham. So the Gemara says, if you made an error of wearing white clothing and you needed black clothing, so then the white clothing won't work. So keman amar Rav Nachman yitzchak Chananya vali b'debei Shammai, and once again that reflects the position of Beis Shammai, and that is of course Chananya's version of Beis Shammai, which again is you got to go out there totally prepared. Simchas amar b'chulin. Now the point that we already established in our Mishnah, but now we're going to spend just a couple minutes discussing, is the following. In our Mishnah, we noted that Simchas disagrees on the case of Truma. And the obvious question is, Simcha disagrees on the case of Truma, but he doesn't disagree on the case of Nazir. Again, we don't follow like Simchas, but let's just quickly review. In the case of Nazir, what did we do? We, according to our Mishnah, according to Tanakhama of our Mishnah, a Nazir can make an Erev with wine. And you and I, who are non-Kohanim, can make an Erev Tchumim using Truma. We can't eat it, but it's edible. Kohen can eat the Truma, and a non-Nazir can drink the wine. Sumchus then came along in the Mishnah and says, I disagree with Truma. Why doesn't he disagree by wine? And the Gemara is going to ask that very question right now. The Ilul Nazir, B'yayin, Lo Palig. My time, I have Shad Debitshal, on Nazira say. So the Gemara says, because you know what Naziris is, it's really a Neder. That is what it is. In fact, the Masechta Nazir follows the Masechta of Nedarim. Because Nazir is really just a subcategory of Neder. And just like with the Neder, if for whatever reason you feel like, I cannot believe I got myself into this Neder. Had I known X, Y, and Z, I would never have made it. And you can go to a Chacham and you could be shoal on the Neder. Same is true by Nazir. You can go to a Chacham and try to get out of your Naziris as well. Okay. And if he finds a Pesach, so you'll get out of it. So for you, Nazir, and wine, that wine is an absolutely forbidden to you. You can get out of your Naziris. Ihachi Truma Nami Afshad Demishal Ilavei. Gemara says, you know you can get out of Truma as well. Meaning, Truma is also a declarative act. Truma is, this 2% is going to the Kohen. And basically, it's a quasi-neder. It's basically me pointing to portions of my food and saying, this food is going to be prohibited to me. It's almost like a neder. In fact, it's so almost like a neder, that just like by a neder, you can be shoel and remove yourself from the neder, same thing was true with Truma. But if you feel that you erroneously determined this to be Truma, and you didn't want this to be Truma, you can go to a Chacham and try to explain to him why it is, and if he finds a Pesach, he can get you out of it. So the Gemara says, so what? I still don't see the difference. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the difference. Because even by Truma, let's say you're successful in your She'elas Chacham, and he says, you know what, it's not Truma. Okay, if it's not Truma, you know what it is? Back to Tevel. It's still prohibited. So in other words, you didn't gain. By the Nazir, if the Chacham finds Pesach and allows you for you to get out of your Neder, good. You and the wine now are good. In the case of Truma, even if he gets you out of it, it just reverts back to Tevel. V'lifra shalami makam acher. So the Gemara says, even when it's Tevel, can't you do the following? Can't you say, you know, back in my house, I have a whole bunch more produce, I'll take off Truma mimakam acher. So the Gemara says, L'nechshu du chaverim, l'chom shalom minamokof. Chaverim, don't do that. Meaning the halacha is, the preferred way to take off Truma is to have both produces together, the one where I'm planning to take off Truma, all the other produce which will be mesukan, which will be corrected, they have to be actually proximate to one another. Okay, can't you do the following? With now your Truma that you've taken off, and now you were Shoel, and it reverts back to Tevel, can't you now segregate a little portion over here of Truma? The Gemara says, Delay Space Shi'ura. So the Gemara says, okay, but there's not enough. Umay Paske. So the Gemara says, okay, all this is well and good, but you're not really giving fundamental answers. Meaning you're making a whole bunch of, well, this happened, and that happened, and this happened, but you're not speaking fundamentally. Elosimcha Sevela Karabanan. So the Gemara says, you're right. Let's speak more fundamentally. So the Gemara says, and more fundamentally, here's what's going on. We know, we're going to say this a number of times, so you're going to hear this now, you're going to hear this again and again. When does the Erev Tchum kick in? When is it effective? Its effective time is during the Bein HaShemashos period. For those, whatever it is, 13 and a half minutes of Bein HaShemashos, it's then, and specifically then, that your Erev Tchumim now will affect for you, will become your Makom Shvisa. Now, there's another issue which is going to be parallel, which is going to run side by side, and that's the following. We know during Bein HaShemashos, what is that? We don't know. Safek Yom, Safek Laila. Maybe day, maybe night. Now, I certainly can't violate any Isuri Shabbos during that point in time. That's a given. It's a Safek. It may very well be Shabbos. Can I violate Isuri Durabanan during the Bein HaShemashos period? That's a major debate. We're going to see this debate coming up shortly in our Masechta. If you cannot violate Isuri Durabanan, so then I can't retract on my Truma. Because retracting in my truma would require me to ask a chacham. Doing so on Shabbos would be rabbinically forbidden. So therefore, during the Bein HaShemeshos period, I can't ask a question on the truma. That is why I can't be shown on the truma. Now, if you're following, the following question should pop right into your head. Isn't the same thing true by Nazir and the wine? Meaning that we're trying to make some sort of fundamental difference between truma and yayin. And now the Gemara says, yeah, you know why by truma you're stuck? Because during the Bein HaShemeshos period, I can't ask a chacham because it's rabbinically prohibited to do so. And Simchus is of the opinion that you can't violate neither Isuri Daraisa nor even Isuri Darabanan during the Bein HaShemeshos period. So why would the Nazir, according to Simchus, be allowed to drink wine? Wouldn't that require She'ela? Tosfos discusses, and Tosfos says the following. Tosfos ala Simchus savar lakarabanan ve'im tamer mehay tamenami Nazir lo ye'arev b'yayin kevin deshvus ulishol al hanadarim b'shabbos k'da'arin b'perek mishayichshich. It was the very end of Shabbos, if you remember, where we talked about asking a chacham about your neder. Well, maybe you can give the argument, says Tosfos, that maybe there's a Tzarech Shabbos, and we learned together that for a Tzarech Shabbos purpose, you can ask a Chacham. So Tosfos says that's how you would have to defend Simchus's position. Okay, let's finish up to the two dots, and we'll pause. We have a brayso over here that speaks about relativity. When I take off my kometz for the mincha, the fistful of the flour, relative to the size of the hand of that kohen who's doing the mitzvah of kemitza, when the Kohen Gadol does his Malach Chafna on Yom Kippurim, relative to the size of the hands of the Kohen Gadol, when you're drinking your cheekful on Yom Kippur, relative to the size of the cheek, and the meal of Shtei Seudos for an Erev, relative to the person. Kemanam Rabbi Zera Simchus Uda Amar Amay Dechazi Lei Be'inan, that accords with the position of Simchus, which is, again, it's not a legalism, it's not that I'm just simply putting food down, you have to actually eat it. So Lema Pliga to Rav Shimon Lazar, the time of Shimon Lazar, Omer Ma'arv Lecholo Zaki Gedei Mizono, Ularafta Mesuda Bein Anisho Kol Adam. So the Gemara says, okay, didn't we learn at the beginning of today's daf, according to Rav Shimon Lazar, that it's not necessarily relative to the person? Even if you're a Ra'av Tan, you're a person with a huge appetite, you only have to set up an Eruv for an Adam Beinoni. So can we not point out that Simchus does not agree with Shimon and Elazar? So the Gemara says, well, look, when it comes to the Chol of Zaken, yes, relative to the Chol and Zaken, so a meal of two meals, which is, in other words, he has a smaller appetite. However, relative to the Rav Tan, to the person who is a glutton, so we could say he's an outlier. Batla Daito Eitzel Kol Adam. He's not going to represent the norm. For him, a Beinonis meal would be sufficient. Okay, good. That takes us to the end of today's daf. Okay, again, the basic question of how much is Shteis Udos? Are foods, how do foods looked at as a standalone or in conjunction with bread? The Gemara then turned its attention to the discussion of what's mazon versus what's zan, and relative to the bracha that we make, bari min mazonos versus any other bracha, the position of Rav and Shmuel. Okay, we covered that briefly. And then we spoke at length today about a Nazir using wine, a Zar using Truma, and the position of Beis Shammai, the position of Hananya's version of Beis Shammai, and then a better understanding of Simchus's position, which, by the way, we don't possibly like neither Beit Shammai, neither Hananya, neither like Simchus, but just a better understanding of their positions. Okay, we conclude for today. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Hananya ben Akasha, Marasa, Gizbachi, Zach, Yisrael, Fichach, Chirbem, Tarmitzu, Shanema, Nechafetz, Amantziko, Yagdil, Tarabiyah.